I grew up and I had a great childhood. I have some great parents, and I'm saying that because they're here, and I would say that if I were elsewhere. I have some great parents. I am blessed with two sets of great parents, and I'm also, or one set of great parents, and I'm also blessed with two sets of great grandparents in my life. My mom's parents and my dad's parents both loved each other their whole relationships and loved God their whole relationships. So growing up, I got to be around three couples that just modeled real love for each other, love for God, and love for their family. It's amazing. And I was sitting there and I was thinking this last week of different memories that I have of growing up with my family, because I don't really have any real bad memories. Now, I have those moments where you remember where you got in trouble. Like, one time I remember my brother and I went shopping with my mom, and we just decided while mom was looking at clothes, we thought being in the clothing would be a great thing to do. Because, hey, it's a perfect fort. I mean, they make them round with a hole in the middle where you can just play. And so my brother and I just decided we're going to climb into the clothing racks while my mom is shopping. That did not go over so well. So you probably know what the kind of words are saying, because I can still remember my mom looking over the top of the display down at us, and she didn't have a happy face on at that moment. Now, my mom's really good at smiling and doing all that, but at that moment, she wasn't really happy. And, you know, so we're kind of like, hi, you know, like, we're in here and you're up there and you can't get us. And so then at some point she's like, you're getting it when you get home. And we're like, well, we're not home now, so we're just going to make the most of it. So my brother and I are just climbing through all the racks and everything else. Well, we did get home, and my mom didn't forget. And so we ran to our rooms, because we heard her go into the kitchen, and she grabbed her favorite utensil of choice, a wooden spoon, and I think she was going to cook something in our rooms. And so we run into our rooms, and we got under our beds as far as we could to the wall as her hand is down under there going like this. And at some point, that spoon was in there mixing up the space under there. You know, we're like, we're not letting her do it. You know, I have those kind of memories, you know, because we all have those memories of those highlight memories of when we really got in trouble. But one of the big memories that I have of my mom, though, one of my favorite memories, is when I was in high school or college, I had a part-time job. And so I'd go to school during the day, go to work in an evening, I'd get home about 9:30, 10 o'clock. And she would always be up in her room just sitting watching TV. And some of my favorite moments are I would just go and I would just sit down next to her, and we would just watch something that, you know, she'd have old school taped on the VCR back in those days. But we would just sit and watch TV, and I thought, this is the neatest thing, because it's just we're watching something together, just spending time together. And she'd ask, how was your day? How was school? And how was work? And we just kind of talk informally, just being there. But I thought, you know, my memories of our encounters together on time are more memorable to me than all the other things, like, because, you know, my kids are like, you grew up and you got so spoiled because you had all this stuff. And I'm like, I guess maybe you could feel that way. But I remember, like, the relationship moments of that have a meaningful impact. And so that relationship is what matters. And, like, my dad, when I started driving, he gave me his dream truck. And I should have thought about this, but I didn't. I have a photo of it. It's a convertible pickup truck that he had back in the mid-'80s. And that de facto became mine when I started driving. And so my dad was on a business trip. My brother and I were clowning around doing something that day, and I wrecked his truck. I crushed somebody with the front end on the other. So for my dad's out of town for the next 3 days. I'm kind of living in, you know, fear of how is my dad going to respond? How is he going to react when he finds out about his truck and he comes to see me? Because I'm thinking I'm dead. And so I can remember I'm at work that night, and I see my dad walk into where I worked, and, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm in trouble. And then my dad just walks up to me, and he's like, are you okay? I was like, okay, that was the best response ever from my dad, because he just showed genuine love and concern. And here it is for days, I'm waiting for him to get back, and I'm like in fear of how's he going to respond, how's he going to react. It was my fault, I wrecked it, did a lot of damage, insurance rates are going to go up. I'm thinking all the scenario of how much trouble I'm in. And then my dad's like, are you okay? I'm like, what a relief. It's a great feeling to have great parents. And we're in this series and we're exploring Paul's letter to a group of people called the Thessalonians in Thessalonica. He went there for 3.5 weeks. He spends time with them, just sharing the gospel with them, preaching to them, doing everything he can. And during that time, he's got a bunch of people that are against him. So during that time, there's a lot of suffering that takes place, a lot of persecution that takes place. And we talked about this. Suffering's when there's pressure put on you. And so there's a lot of pressure being put on all of them for becoming Christ followers, because you have people that were still holding on to Jewish teachings that were like, we don't like this teaching about Christ. So they were having issues. You had the whole Roman Greek god system and all their multiple religions. And they're like, we don't like you changing. We don't like you converting. We don't like you walking away from everything. So they cause problems too. So you have all this pressure being put on them, all this persecution being put on them, to the point where Paul has to get out of town. He's only there 3.5 weeks to invest in these people. I mean, that's crazy to think about. He comes in, he reaches a bunch of people, he does everything he can to pour into them, and then he's got to get out of town. And so then he leaves and he goes on to different places in ministry, and he, whatever support system he could leave behind to help them, he does. And then as time goes by, he's just like, I wonder what's happening to them. I'm really concerned about them. I want to know. So he sends Timothy to go find out. Give me more details, Timothy, what's happening in Thessalonica? So Timothy goes and he spends time with him, and he comes back and he gives him a report. And so then that instigates Paul to write a letter to them. And in the first chapter, it's really neat. If you look at Thessalonians, the first chapter, however they divided up the chapters, because Paul wasn't sitting there going chapter 1, verse 1, sentence 1. And so he's just writing a letter. At some point, hundreds of years later, somebody decided, hey, we're going to come up with a system to make it easier to find things when we're looking at these documents. So they came up with chapters and verses. But it's really interesting. If you watch how they broke down chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3, all three of those first three chapters end with some comment about the return of Jesus. So one thing that communicates to us is this group of Christ followers has lost hope. So he's reminding them of, hey, this is what's coming ahead for us. But I really like that, because it is a reminder to us of, man, Jesus is coming back for us. And keeping that in the forefront of our mind and in the forefront of our thoughts, that what we do matters. Now, when you look at chapter 1, when Paul's writing to these individuals, it's really, he's kind of looking at them, kind of talking to them, having anticipation. What do you look forward to? Then when he goes into chapter 2, the theme is a little bit more, what are your motives? What are your attitudes? What motivates you? And really, as I look at chapter 3, the thing that I see that Paul comes out is really his fatherly heart for these people. So I just called it relation or relationship. Because you see this kind of love that emanates from Paul as he's talking to them. So if we were to look at chapter 3, we're just going to look at some ideas of how Paul expresses his concern and an affection like a parent, which is relationship. But in that, we're going to look at some principles on having great relationships with people. So we'll kind of unpack this real quick. 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 1, it goes like this. Therefore, when we could bear it no longer, we were willing to be left behind at Athens alone, and we sent Timothy, our brother, and God's co-worker in the gospel of Christ, to establish and exhort you in your faith, that no one be moved by these afflictions, for you yourselves know that we are destined for this. For when we were with you, we kept telling you beforehand that we were to suffer affliction, just as has come to pass, and just as you know. Now, suffering, as I said, is pressure placed on you. It's uncomfortable and hard. Does anybody enjoy suffering? No. Our whole culture is built around avoiding suffering at all cost. Now, when we're suffering, when we have pressure that's placed on us, the thing that we have to be concerned about is what comes out of me when I'm being pressed on. Because a lot of times that reveals the real character of who I am. Now, Paul is concerned with his friends because he's just like, suffering, as we all know, can cause people to lose faith or turn back to their old ways. Why would I keep going this way if it's getting harder when I could have stayed over here and life would be easier? Why? Why keep going through the pain if I can just step over here right now and I can take care of that pain and I can get out of this suffering, I can get out of this persecution, people will leave me alone. Paul is rightfully concerned. Now, the one thing Paul reminds them is, hey, suffering's going to happen. Jesus told us so in John 16:33. I have told you all this so that you may have peace in me. Here on earth you will have many trials and sorrows, but take heart because I have overcome the world. I mean, Jesus himself talked about the fact we will face difficult times. We will have difficult moments. Now, suffering does not mean God is mad at you. However, disobedience and unwise choices can put us in a situation where we make a real mess of things. But just because we're safe facing suffering does not mean God's mad at you. Suffering can be a result of dealing with lost people. Your people that don't understand faith, don't like faith, don't accept faith, so they're just like, I don't want you around. And right now, we're seeing this in our culture where faithlessness is more important to people than faithfulness, being full of faith and walking with God. So now you're seeing culture being more willing to kind of push people of faith to the sidelines, kind of tell them to be quiet, tell them to not talk about what they believe, keep it private, don't let it have anything to do with the public. You see that, but it's a result of dealing with lost people that just don't understand or know. It can be a result of living in a broken world. There's problems, there's diseases, there's all famines, floods, everything that just happens from being in a fallen, broken world. And sometimes we just face suffering. Now, the great thing about suffering, which we don't like to admit, which is a reality though, is suffering is often used to teach us, to discipline us, or to develop us. We learn the best sometimes when we're going through a difficult time, don't we? We don't like to admit that because we're like, hey, God, I want you to teach me everything there is about walking with you while I'm on my vacation at Disney World. Now, that would be an awesome way, but usually we learn the best when we're going through something difficult, don't we? At least it sticks in our minds a lot better. I mean, Paul wrote this to the Romans at one time. He said in Romans 5:3, not only that, but we rejoice in our suffering, knowing that our suffering produces endurance, and our endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not put us to shame because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. I mean, there's something about it. When we go through difficulty, it helps us to develop and mature. I mean, exercise is putting your body through difficulty. You're pushing it. You're stressing it. You're doing all that. And then what's it do? It produces muscle. And then suffering, if you look at Mark 13, 9 through 11, suffering is really an opportunity for us to proclaim who Jesus is. Because as Jesus is talking that, he's like, there'll be difficult times that are coming. There'll be hard times that are coming. But don't worry about it because that suffering will put you in position to talk to people you probably would never be able to talk to. And as you're talking to them, don't even worry about what you're going to say because the Holy Spirit's going to be right there with you telling you what to say in those moments. Suffering can set us up to be in a position where we can proclaim Jesus. Because, hey, how much better can you relate to people when you actually have gone or are going through something? How much easier it is to speak into their life than if you don't? Like, who do you want to talk to about parenting? Somebody that is a parent and has parented, or somebody that knows nothing about parenting? Because they've never been a parent. I mean, you're going to naturally talk to people, and so it opens up opportunities. And sometimes suffering can put you in places where you can minister and talk to people you would never encounter before, but because of what you're going through, it gives you that opportunity to connect with them. Now, during suffering, we tend to think selfishly and to think short-term. We're like, it's all about me, and I have to get out of this as quickly as I can. How quickly can I end this trial? How quickly can I get out from under this pressure that's on me? And so oftentimes, if we're not careful, we exaggerate everything in our imagination. Where we're like, one person is against us, and suddenly it's everybody's against us. We exaggerate it. And so because it's just our natural tendency, we're tempted to turn back to our old ways. When we're facing pressure, I want to go back. I want to get out of this. Sometimes we're tempted to self-destruct to hide the pain. I'm just like, I don't want to deal with this. How can I get out of it? We think short term. We think selfishly. But we really need accountability and a support system to keep going. That's why the church is so valuable. It's why as Paul is writing to this group of Christ followers that their network together was so important because they could encourage and strengthen each other. It's why it's important that we stay in close relationship with God. It's why we have friends there to encourage us and God to guide us so that we keep the end in mind. Because when we're under the pressure, we just think short term. We rarely think big picture. And Paul's trying to get them, think big picture. As you go what you're going through, as you're facing the pressure, as you're facing the hardship, as you're facing what feels like defeat after defeat after defeat, as you're facing setback after setback after setback, keep the big picture in mind. And it's why I've shared this probably before. There's this principle called HALT, H-A-L-T. Don't make a drastic decision when you're hungry, H, angry, A, lonely, L, or T, tired. Because sometimes when we're at those extremes, it's when we really do crazy things. Don't believe me? Look up about Esau in the Old Testament, and he gives up his whole inheritance over a bowl of soup. So Paul, continuing in his letter, verse 5, he says this, "For this reason, when I could bear it no longer, I sent to learn about your faith for fear that somehow the tempter had tempted you, excuse me, and our labor would be in vain." I can see this as he's writing this. When I could bear it no more, I had to get information about you. And it's this deep love that's coming out of him. Really, when I read that, I think about how my wife is when she has to know what's going on with our kids when they're not around. She's just like, "I need information. I have to have details. I have to be there." And he's just like, when I could bear it no longer, I had to know what's going on with your faith. What's going on? And they didn't have the advantage of, he could just be like, "Hey, pull out your phone and call him. Let's FaceTime and find out what's going on." We don't have the internet. We don't have Instagram. We don't have Facebook. We don't have news. We don't have any letters. Couldn't even go by mail. It took weeks to get there because somebody had to actually physically carry it to the next person. And for Paul, that was not an easy thing because you didn't know where Paul was going to be. So it could take a very long time just for a letter to make it to him because they have to go to the next town where they think he is. Ask about him. They're like, "Dude, we chased that guy out of town and he went that way and then he got to go to the next town." And so for tracking, information did not flow like it does now. So like, I have to find out what's going on. So I sent to learn about your faith. Because he's concerned about the tempter, Satan, the great tempter who is out to kill and steal and destroy. I mean, here is what Paul's saying. Don't be surprised when difficulties occur. Expect them. Don't be surprised that suddenly things get hard. Expect them, especially when breakthroughs are experienced. I mean, because we, even for us in our context, we've had some great time where we've had some phenomenal times together praying and seeking God's face and worshiping together and everything else. Don't be surprised when suddenly difficulties come and setbacks come and emotions come hard and things hit us hard and suddenly there's conflicts that arise and suddenly there's difficulties and suddenly there's morale that falls and it's harder to forgive. There's a lack of unity of passion. There's only faults that we see in people where all of a sudden things get more difficult. Don't be surprised about that, because why? What's the enemy want to do? Steal, kill, and destroy. And then he writes on, he's just like, "So I send Timothy." And Timothy comes back in verse 6, "But now that Timothy has come to us from you and has brought us the good news of your faith and love and reported that you always remembered us kindly and longed to see us as we long to see you." I mean, here it is. It's a great thing that you see this relationship. Paul wants to be with them and they likewise want to be with him. I mean, isn't that the best feeling in a relationship where you want to be friends with somebody and they want to be friends with you? Where you contact them and they're like, "Man, I'm glad you contacted me because I've been wanting to contact you. You want to hang out because I want to hang out. You want to be together." Isn't that the best relationship ever when both people want to be together? Forced relationships are the awkward ones. But see, here you see this relationship forming between them. "We want to be near you. You want to be near us." And he continues, "For this reason, brothers, in all our distress and affliction, we have been comforted about you through your faith. For now we live if you are standing fast in the Lord. For what thanksgiving can we return to God for you for all the joy that we feel for your sake before our God? As we pray most earnestly night and day that we may see you face to face and supply what is lacking in your faith." He's like, "I want to see you and I want to pour into your life." And aren't those the best relationships? where you get around somebody and you talk to them and they pour into your life and you walk away where you feel better, stronger, smarter, more alive by your encounter with them. Isn't that, those are the best moments ever. You just come alive. And what was lacking in their faith? What had Paul concern? It appears that to be, like I said a moment ago, it just appears they lacked hope. It's like to them, you're suffering. All you're seeing is what you're facing right around you in that moment. That a lot of times you don't see the big picture. And so then I love how this, because Paul, I think, realizes something that we know also, is that suffering is more tolerable when we can see the end. It's so much easier to face something when you see the end. If you can't see the end, it's a lot harder to face something because you think this is never going to end, and it's so much harder. So Paul does something because he switches over from being really thankful for what God's doing in their midst to praying a prayer over them. And then he just says this in verse 11, "Now may our God and Father himself, our Lord Jesus Christ, direct our way to you." So he's writing out a prayer. "And may the Lord make you increase and abound in love for one another and for all as we do for you, so that he may establish your hearts blameless in holiness before our God and Father at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ with all his saints." He paints for them, keep at it, keep going. Here's the end result. Jesus is coming back with all his people to come and get us, to take us to be with him. So keep your eyes on that end prize. Keep your eyes on what matters most. Keep the end in mind. Because really, if I really have my eyes on my future hope, I can endure today. So here in all this is some relationship things, and we'll unpack them real quickly, that Paul just unpacks. And I'm not going to go back and tie it together, but I just wrote these down. One, on how do I have a great relationship with people? One is this: think right about people. It's often in our mind. It's often in our imagination where our relationship health with people is made or broken. Because we'll do things like this when something happens, we don't understand anything or something goes on, and so then we will do things if we're not careful, and sometimes we might do this with our spouses, and we'll just be like, he always or she never. We make it really big in our imagination. And so we have to really be careful about that. Think right about people. Have a long memory of the good things and a short memory of the bad things. Excuse me. Because that's often where we do the reverse. We remember the good things very little, but we remember the bad things for a very long time. We need to flip that. Discipline your imagination. Don't make assumptions. Don't hold grudges. Believe the best in people. It takes a lot less energy than trying to figure out their motives and agenda all the time if you just believe the best in people. Now, obviously, we have to use wisdom because we don't want to be taken advantage of. We got to use a little bit of wisdom there. But really, it's so much easier just to believe the best in people and just to be like, not to suspect them that they're scheming or they're doing anything. I just believe the best. It's always the best place to live. It just takes all the pressure off relationships when you just believe the best. Speak well of people. Don't criticize or gossip or vent. Don't take on someone else's offense. It's just think right in how we view people. And that's what I love about Paul, because he's thinking right about this group of people. He only got to know them 3.5 weeks. He doesn't know them very well. He doesn't have a lot of details other than his under 3 weeks with them and then Timothy's report back to him. So he doesn't have a lot of details, but he highlights all the great things about who they are, all the great things that God's doing in their lives. He's thinking the best and believing the best about them. Then going on how to have a great relationship, really what controls me is not only do I think right, I need to really make sure that I do right. Because I control me. In a relationship, I don't control anybody else. I control me. So then I need to make sure that I'm doing what's right. Excuse me. that I respond, not react to people, that I listen mostly, that I watch my tone and body language, that I speak wisely, that I just control me in the relationship, that I do what is right, that I strive to be blameless before God, that I control me. And then I love this next part. If we're going to make our relationships really next level, if we're going to really build our relationships up, then invest, excuse me, invest in people. Take time to really invest in people. Spend time with them. Communicate. Make effort. Paul could have easily just been like, I'm just going to send Timothy back, or maybe Silas, my two top guys, they'll invest. But Paul's like, no, I want to be where you guys are. I want to go back to Thessalonica, and I want to invest in you. I want to pour into your lives. I want to be ministered back to by you as I see the faith and what's happening in you. So there's this mutual investment taking place there. I want to be with you. You want to be with me. I want to pour into your life, and I want your faith and love for God to pour into my life and encourage me. That's just spending time. There's a reality that whoever spends the most time wins. And love is spelled T-I-M-E. That if we're going to have great relationships, it just comes by investing in people. Then go on and not only just invest in people, but love people even when they don't deserve it. It's easy to love people that deserve it. It's a little bit harder to love people at the moment, excuse me, that they don't deserve it. But love people, and then nurture an increasing love, not a dying love. Do what you can to cause your love to grow. No matter what stage in life you're in, allow it to grow. Love insiders very well. People in the family of God, love each other well. And then love outsiders too, so that they want to be around insiders. I mean, let there just be love that emanates through who you are. And then in that love, because I love this because there's this parental aspect of how Paul, when he's interacting with his audience, he was like a dad writing to them. And so as a dad, he wants them to grow. He wants them to be their best. He's reminding them of the high standard of what it is to be a follower of Christ, not wanting them to live to the low standard, but challenging them to the high standard of what it means to really walk with God, telling them, don't go for the minimum in God. Go for everything that God has for you. He's being a dad. He's coaching them, but he's also patient with them because he realizes everybody are people in process. So he wants them to go for everything that they are in God. He wants to push them, but also he loves them enough to realize we're all people in process. And so we need to be that way. Be patient with people while we push each other to go in for everything that God has for us. You guys don't know this because you might not be on the list. Gordon, every once in a while, he'll send out these texts to a bunch of people, and so every once in a while I'll get one of the texts from him, and they're really neat because usually it's just this inspirational thought, and it's really kind of at the core of it is I just want everything that my Jesus has for me. And that becomes encouraging because it's like, okay, we're not living down here, we're living up here. It's like, I'm not settling for the minimum. I'm going for all of it. I'm going all in. And that's what Paul's kind of pushing them. And it's really kind of, we love people enough to know, yeah, you're a person in process, but we want you to move from, don't stay in this place. I love you enough to say, get over here and go in for everything that God has for you. And it continues. When we're going to be in good relationships, one thing we have to realize is that at times conflict is going to happen. Don't be shocked by it. Work through it. Now, Paul's not having any conflict, but he doesn't know if he is or not. And if you read the tone of how he writes, he's like, I was nervous. I didn't know what was going on with you. I didn't know if our whole investment there has been a waste, has been in vain. I don't know if what all these accusations have been made against me by people there, which I can't be there to defend myself. I don't know if those accusations stuck. And suddenly you're like, well, we only knew Paul for 3.5 weeks. We've been around you for our whole life. Man, what you're saying is probably pretty true. So, man, maybe Paul is those things. He doesn't know what he's stepping into. He doesn't know what problems could be there. So why, if we're going to have good relationships, we have to make sure we resolve conflict biblically, because conflict will happen. Don't be shocked by it, but work through it. Be a forgiver, not a revenger. Choose reconciliation over revenge. Don't keep records of the things that people do. Have conversations. Choose understanding over my standing. Have conversations. Find out what's going on. Don't keep a record. Don't play games. Fight for relationships. Don't isolate yourself and don't let anyone stay alone. Because the reality is, when one hurts, we all hurt. What happens with a part impacts the very whole. Paul wrote this to his Corinthian friends: if one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, all rejoice together. Because really, in all reality, when we're a family together, when one wins, we all win. And when one is suffering and losing, we all lose. Because we're all in it together. And then moving on, if we're going to have really great relationships, take them to the next level, be grateful for the people in your life. I mean, don't you love people that are thankful and have gratitude and thankful that you're their friend? That makes it feel so much better than somebody that takes advantage of you. When somebody, like, when you're just thankful that we're friends, appreciate them, do thoughtful acts of kindness, pray for them. Positive acts eventually help us to develop right thoughts about people. When we just do things that are just positive, it changes everything. It's like I got to a point a couple years ago where I was just like, I want to have the very best relationship that I can have with my wife. Because there was just some time where there was some tension. And I'm just like, okay, I need to change how I think. I need to change how I act. So what can I start doing? So the first thing I started doing, I was just like, I need to start thinking about her the right way instead of me thinking selfishly of what I want to happen. I'm just like, I want to connect with her. So one of the things I started doing is I got a dry erase marker and I would start making notes. When I'd get up in the morning and take a shower, I would make a little note on the mirror for that day. And I did that for a while, and then you could tell the notes that were more meaningful to her and not, because some would stay around a long time and others wouldn't. But at that, I'm starting to learn to connect. And then I'm like, you know what, that's not enough, because as I'm thinking about her more, I'm like, well, now I want to do more for her. And so then I thought, well, I'm up in the morning, so then I'd write her a little note, and I would just stick it in her on her car, on her steering wheel, so when she got ready to leave, take the kids to school, there's a little note sitting there. And then I thought, oh, that's so cute. And then I thought, you know, what would I be doing when I was dating her? What would I have done then? And then I'm like, well, no, I'm going to do this differently. So then I was just like, I just started getting notes, and I'd write her a longer note, and then I would drive it up to where she works, and I would stick it in her car at lunch so that she would get out at the end of the day, and then there would be this longer note. And then I thought, you know what? This love is growing. This attitude's totally changing me. Then I just started going, okay, I'm going to skip lunch today, and I'm just going to run to the florist, and I'm going to get some flowers, and I'm going to go put them in her car for her so when she comes out there. And it's really just because, and then... then I'm like, well, now I find myself now thinking, what can I do for her? How can I bless her? How can I honor her? How can I help her? And then I'm like, I don't even remember what I was all mad about or what I was all frustrated about, because now my attitude has changed in how I treat her. Now I'm in trouble because I share all that publicly. But it's when we do thoughtful acts of kindness, when we pray for people that we're frustrated with, when we show gratefulness to them and love towards them, even though we don't feel like they deserve it or even though we don't like them, there's something about when we do those things, it changes how we think about them, it changes how we view them, and it changes the whole nature of the relationship. And then it gives that other individual more of a willingness now to approach us. Because then they don't sense the wall. They just sense the love. And so then it creates the avenue that a new relationship could come. And you know what? Sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes that other person doesn't respond. But you know what? My attitude, my agenda, my focus, everything's changed because I've been doing all that to them. I've been showing them love. So then I'm no longer carrying bitterness. I'm no longer frustrated. I'm free of it all. And if the relationship can build and connect, great. If not, sorry, I did everything that was under my control to do. And then that becomes awesome. But when we show gratitude, when we show thankfulness for people, it just breathes a whole new thing into our lives. One of my favorite things that my wife takes as being so important to do is she's just like, write thank you notes. And so when the kids get gifts, she's like, we're just going to write thank you notes. We're just going to express gratitude back to the people that did something for us. It's a simple little act, but it just communicates, hey, you matter. And when we do that to the people in our lives, it strengthens the relationship when we feel valued. In fact, one study I heard is that most people would thrive in their workplaces a lot better if their bosses just showed them appreciation. Not necessarily dollars. But if they just mention to you, you matter, you're valuable. So if you want to take your relationships to the next level, be grateful. And then finally, keep perspective in relationships. Because Jesus is coming back. So live to honor him in everything that you do. Think what is right. Do as what is right. Say what is beneficial. Abound in love for people, love that is over and above, overflowing. Model relationships that move people toward Jesus. Because why we want to keep the end in mind is realizing that we want to take as many people as we can and get them to be with our Jesus with us. And so we want to keep that perspective in mind because there's those moments where it's easy when things are tense in a relationship that you spout off or you make a drastic decision or you do something that you later regret, not realizing in the moment that seemed and felt right, but the big picture is, ooh, am I going to be ashamed of that before Jesus or am I pulling people towards Jesus by how I'm responding and acting and talking. It's keeping the big picture in mind. How is what I'm doing? How is how I'm relating with people? How in the conversations that I'm having, does it honor God? Does it push them to want to be closer to God? Does it push them to want to be more involved in God's mission? Does it make them want to be with God forever? Or does it kind of pull them away? Does it kind of keep them a little more distant from who God is and what God is doing? What am I doing? We got to keep that end result in mind. Where does this conversation lead? Where do these actions lead? Does it move them closer to Jesus or pull them away? Because our natural tendency is always to think selfishly in the moment. But the more we can keep the big picture in mind in life as we face things, because if we keep the big picture in mind, we're like, eternity's a long time, life is short, eternity's forever. I can deal with a month, a year, a decade of hardship, of persecution, of rejection for an eternity with my Savior. I can deal with that in the same way. I can go through these hard things in relationships if I know, hey, we're working towards them connecting with God and us connecting with God. We're going to spend eternity with Him. So I'll go through the hard stuff so we can get to the point of together forever in eternity. I keep the end in mind. And that's what I love about Paul's letter to the Thessalonians. He knows them so little, but he gives them so much to think about and contemplate, and really for us too. But keep the very end in mind for yourself and for your relationships. And there might be relationships that we have in your life that they're strained. Pray. Have conversations. Do what you can to break down some of the barriers. but you control you. So you be the best you that you can be. If it means humbling yourself, humble yourself. If it means closing your mouth and zipping your mouth, zip your mouth. But allow God to work with you and allow your relationships to thrive and to flourish. And let's just see what God will do when we just live right and give our relationships to him and we treat people well. Because man, we treat people well, they just, this Jesus becomes contagious to them. Because they see Jesus by how we act and talk and interact and live. And so then allow that to just get deep into your heart. We're going to come and they're going to sing one closing song this morning. Thank you for joining us on this Mother's Day. But as we sing this song, that's what I ask that you do. Think about the relationships in your life. Because there's some you might just need to have a conversation with. There's others that you might need to just write them a note. There's others just like, hey, let's go to Starbucks and have a coffee and just talk because we haven't talked in a long time. But think about those relationships in your life and look at what investment you can make to bring them to life.